Hey everyone, welcome back to the Woofing Possum podcast. I'm your host Greg, and today we are going to be diving into the world of stubborn. Not stubborn dogs though, we're going to be talking all about us, stubborn humans. So let's dive on in. So welcome back everybody to the Woofing Possum podcast. Quick apology to start with, I do have a coffee with me. Those who know me know I'm a little bit of a coffee fiend. But I'm also fighting a little bit of a kind of bad throat. So in an effort to try and keep the show on the road, you may occasionally hear the odd little gulp of coffee. So for the listening experience, I apologise immensely. But on that note, I'm just going to take a quick swig. So, stubborn. I thought what better place to start for this episode, which is basically coming off the back of a few conversations I've had in recent classes and recent one-to-ones, and a bit of a theme. It's always there. Now, talking about this, guys, I'm obviously not referring to everybody all of the time. I'm guilty of this. I think all of us will have parts of our lives where this applies, and for some of us it might be more than others. But one of the really interesting things that I often come across when working with people and their canine companions is how stubborn we are as humans to change our ways, look at things differently, shift perspectives, and try to ultimately shift ourselves in a way that is going to allow us to reach our goals. So a few examples of this that have kind of come about, which has led me to want to talk about it, is more around how as humans we are quite set in our ways. We have our routines, we have our plans, we have our little, often subconscious ideas in our head about what we want life to look like. And if life with our pooch kind of challenges that, we immediately shift all of the attention to pooch and trying to get them to change their ways, try to train them to do something differently. And we find it a massive source of frustration. So I'm going to pick on a common problem that I've actually spoke to a few people about, and it's their dog's reaction to other dogs when out on a walk. And the goals are almost universal. The goal of the human is they want to be able to walk past the dogs without the dogs showing any interest or reaction in the other dogs, whether that be nerves and a bit of barking, whether that be excitement and wanting to lunge and play. Generally, they just want to go for a nice, easy walk, kind of no pulling on the lead, dogs not yanking and pulling and trying to get to other things and other people. And that's their end goal. And one of the commonalities with a few of these conversations has been the dog's perceived unpredictability. Now, I'm saying perceived, and I'm not going to dive into that, but generally, as the human end of the lead, they feel like it's a very unpredictable experience for them, and some days the dog can just walk past and there's no dramas and there's no events, where other days they can't. And they've tried everything. They've done different training courses, different classes, different trainers, different people, different kit, different equipment, and the problem still occurs. So when I hear that, I often then talk to them about, well, what are you doing? What, talk me through, almost step by step, what does that walk look like? And if I ask them to repeat that with the various techniques, the various kit and equipment that they've used, there is always one constant, and it's us. It's the human. It's what we do. It's our, that's a good word. It's our desire to continue our little plan regardless. So in this example, the plan is just to walk down the path. That is what the human does. So the human wants to walk down the path uninterrupted, without stopping, with the dog calm, controlled, all that good stuff. And there's a real interesting moment when I talk to clients about this, and we kind of hit upon the, okay, so you've tried A, you've tried B, you've tried C, you've tried D, all of these things very much focused on the dog. What have you done differently? And I will get a few different reactions to that question, of course I will. They may repeat the things that they've done, whether the training methods, you know, kit, equipment, that kind of stuff. But I always try and probe and go back to, so what are you doing differently? What have you changed to help kind of progress this bit of training? rather than putting all of the change expectation on the dog. And for some people, that alone can be a little bit of a light bulb moment, which is fantastic. Some people might even get a little kind of abrupt. I might upset them a little bit. But it's a really interesting scenario. It's very, very hard when you are in the moment, when you are, you know, working with your dog, you're going for a walk, you're trying to look at, you know, your training situations, whatever it might be. It's really hard to objectively look at yourself, see what's happening, see what you're doing, and therefore analyzing can be, it's very, very difficult when you are in the moment to analyze what's going on. And that's where, you know, working with a fantastic trainer will help you massively, because we have the benefit of being on the outside, looking in, and then we can pick up on all these things and guide you and support you appropriately. But generally for yourself, it's a good skill to learn or even just be aware of. You might not be able to actively practice it. But if you are currently dealing with a scenario with your dog and you feel like you've tried everything, the best thing you can do is to then start to reflect. What does that look like? What does that pattern, routine, scenario look like? And you will find there is always constants. There's predictable things in there. There's patterns. Dogs are brilliant at patterns. And we are rubbish at being random. So we are very, very predictable as humans. So helping us become more aware of that and helping us change our little stubborn mindsets can be a huge game changer with our training. So I'm going to pick on my Betty Boo. I've spoken about her before on the podcast. When she came to me, life just went upside down. She was quite an extreme case, don't get me wrong. But I think there is a lot of things in there because I had to change my expectations and my patterns and my rhythms and my wants and desires very, very quickly because I basically had no choice. Interestingly, I find that with a lot of people, it's when their dogs are generally, and I'm going to use this word and I hate the word, generally fine. You know, things generally go all right. You can walk comfortably. You know, there's just these little bits that just catch you by surprise now and then. And they're the ones that often drive massive frustration. With me, with Betty, kind of having to change my life upside down was the only thing I could do. So I didn't have that option of just riding out 80% of the walks because they were fine or they were all right, and then I was just dealing with a small amount of 20%. It was actually, you know, 95% of that stuff we had to change. So for people like me, making that change is almost forced upon us. Whereas if your dog is more of the 80-20 style, then your desire to change what you're doing is even less because it, in your head, it works. 80% of the time, it's great. You know, things are fine. I don't have any dramas, don't have any issues. Just every now and then, X, Y, or Z happens, and it really annoys me. And it becomes kind of like a real bone of contention. Because if you're aware of this niggling habit, this niggling issue, it is very easy to then start to forget about the 80, and you focus solely on the 20. So you're kind of really focusing on those little problematic things that happen, those little gripes, those little niggles, and they grow and they manifest and they frustrate and they do all that kind of stuff. So going a little bit full circle, just as I pause for a quick wet of the whistle. Going back to that walking example, one of the things I speak to people about is, again, as I mentioned, kind of what can you do differently as a human? So the current approach is walking down the path, dog is wherever the dog is, and you're trying to go from point A to point B. So what can we do different? Is your mind racing? Any ideas? Are you drawing a blank? And this is the challenge. This is where it all comes down to. So with some of the clients that I've spoken to about this particular issue, we've looked at, right, can we change what that pattern looks like? So at the minute it's, you know, A to B and it's one foot in front of the other. And there might be a whole host of other things going on, like lead handling and, you know, distance from you from the dog and pulling them in close or giving them more lead or whatever it is that you're doing. But the actual movement from A to B, that is a constant. That's always there. That's always the thing you're doing. And we've tried to change all the other variables except that. So I might say to you, right, let's change that. Let's look at a different approach or a different change of goal in the scenarios where there's other dogs. Now, again, guys, this is just an example. It's not what I'm saying you should do for every dog, because this is not suitable for every dog. But what I'm trying to do is just kind of give you these different views. So if I know my dog can focus and listen and do some cool things for me, what I might recommend is, why don't we stop? So let's stop the movement. Let's change our habit of trying to go from A to B, and let's put a little A point one in there, a little stop. And then let's reassess. Let's understand what we can do. Let's understand how this we can use that little break to help our dogs kind of channel their energies a little bit differently, build a bit of focus with us, and then can we carry on our you know, one foot in front of the other, getting to point B. And some people can really struggle with that. Why should I stop? I'm on my dog walk. My purpose of my dog walk is to do X thousand steps in a short amount of time, and I like to do it with my dog and all this kind of stuff. And it's a really interesting dynamic I can find myself in as a trainer, around trying to understand how I can help people when their motivations for the goal that they're trying to achieve and their desire to change themselves don't always align and don't always meet. And this is back to that kind of shifting a lot of the pressure and the expectation on the dog. And that, again, will often drive frustration, because they'll try lots of different things with the dog and none of them work, and therefore it's kind of all the dog's fault. And this is where the teamwork aspect becomes huge, because we've got to be a team. We've got to work with our dogs, and we've got to look at that ability to understand each other's needs and how do we find that suitable middle ground for everybody that can allow us to progress our journey. And the key thing with this always, folks, is these things are never, or rarely, honestly, permanent. So if in that example I'm saying, look, when you're walking along and you see a dog approaching, and because you don't know, you do not have that confidence that your dog is going to give you a repetitive reaction or repetitive behavior in that environment, and there's that 20% of doubt in your mind, let's stop, let's do something differently, let's implement A, B, and C, which is a change on you, Mr. Human or Mrs. Human or whatever we're doing, and let's see, does that start to build up your predictability of what your dog does? And if it does, fantastic. And in the simplest of forms, just because I'm aware this is an audible format, so what I'm thinking and what's coming out of my mouth might not be aligned, but it's a real simple premise. Imagine I'd said to one of my clients, right, what I'm going to ask you to do is I'm going to ask you to walk, I'm going to ask you to stop, I'm going to ask you to get your dog to focus on you, and you're going to reward your dog with a bit of sniffing in the grass as that dog walks past, and then you're going to get your dog's focus back on you, and you're going to continue your walk. So that is what I would like you to, you know, do, and I want you to see how successful that is, and, you know, do you still see these intermittent periods of your dog trying to say hello to the other dog or bark at the other dog or whatever it is that they're doing. Now, instantly a lot of people's minds will go, okay, well, that's great, but that's going to now take me twice as long to do my walk because I'm going to pass, on average, I don't know, 10 dogs, and if I have to stop and stop for 30 seconds every time, then, you know, that's very quickly going to add more time onto my, you know, kind of day in my walk, and I may or may not have the ability to do that. And we instantly start looking at barriers and issues and kind of ways that we are limiting ourselves moving forward. And it's not a permanent step, as I mentioned. This is about, let's change our behavior, let's change our pattern, let's change what we're doing, let's assess it, let's see where we get to, and then we can look at evolution. And evolution would be going from that stationary behavior into the full movement behavior, which was our original goal. But if I know the full movement behavior is already unpredictable, then me just continuing the movement aspect of that when I've tried everything else is the first thing we need to change. And then we can build on that moment of static behavior with the sniffing in the grass, and then we can look to evolve it into more movement, more momentum, and rebuild a new pattern of what our dog's expectation is when they're in that scenario in the future. And because that journey is not often very obvious, it is to us trainers, because we already start formulating little plans in our brain and all that kind of stuff, but to a lot of us, we can't see that trajectory. We just see a very harsh, okay, I'm walking my dog with 20% of the times where my dog does something I'm not a fan of, and now you're telling me that for 100% of the time I have to stop and do A, B, and C. And that shift feels very dramatic, and it can be very hard to buy into, because it is such a shift in my expectation that I'm not really up for it. And this is one of the hardest challenges, and this is where that stubbornness really comes in, because it is often on the part of the human. We talk about control and management a lot with dog training, and this is where we have to try and help our dogs not practice the behaviours that we're not a fan of. And whilst we implement things to stop them practicing those behaviours, we can overtake it with the training and the things that we want them to do. And control and management, again, is often very dependent on changes to us, our lifestyle, our routine, our home setup, and things like that. And that's a massive inconvenience. It's a massive frustration. And often it is met with, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to change A, B, or C in my routine or how I approach a situation or my home layout or whatever it might be. And I get it. I totally, totally get it. However, it is a necessary evil. It is something that we have to do as part of that learning journey. It's the same reason that we have safety devices for babies and toddlers. There's reasons we have those little clips that you can put on cupboards to stop them opening. There's those plastic covers that go into sockets so they don't put fingers in them. There's baby gates so they can't access staircases and other dangerous parts of the house. That is all control and management. And we have to do it with dogs as well, because part of their learning is, I'm either going to help you through a developmental phase of your life, and or I'm going to be training you some cool stuff and different stuff and stuff that is much more beneficial to you as the dog and me as the human, whilst, you know, that control and management is in place, and gradually we can start to take it away. And it's really, really similar with dogs, but it's so difficult for us humans to understand that and to implement that. And honestly, for us to sell it as trainers, it's really, really difficult to accept that type of advice and guidance from a professional when your mindset is very much focused on what you perceive as the cause of the issue, which is, let's be honest, the dog. So it's the dog that's doing A, B, or C, and it's the dog that's doing the things I don't like, therefore it's the dog that I need to change, it's the training that I need to improve, it's the dog, it's the dog, it's the dog. So when somebody comes along and advises, actually, no, it's where you're walking the dog, it's the home setup with the dog, it's your approach with the dog, it's your routine, it's this, it's that. And that blame shifts from one party to another. Instantly, of course, it's going to get your back up a little bit. Of course it is. It's going to frustrate you. It's going to be like, no, hang on a sec. It's the dog. And I say blame, obviously, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, folks. It's not blame in that real harsh sense. It's just, it's a symbiotic relationship. It's cohabiting. You are working together as a team, and therefore you can't always expect the other person to do those changes. Exactly the same with relationships, exactly the same whether that's personal or professional relationships. The best ones out there are the ones where there is that little bit of quid pro quo. It's where you use compromise, it's where you change things, it's where you evolve together as a partnership to ensure that everybody is getting their needs met to the best of our abilities. And that initially might mean more compromise than you're comfortable with, but over time it will change, it'll evolve, it'll get better, because there is a little bit more understanding of that relationship going forward. And it's almost identical with your dogs. So if you're sat listening to this or out with your dog or doing whatever at the moment, I would absolutely challenge you to really look at yourself, really look at that environmental setup, whether it's your handling, your ability, whatever it might be, and see if you can find a commonality when you're looking at something that you're wanting to work on. And it might not be a problem behavior. It might not be something that's causing you an issue. It might be something that you're trying to improve on. For example, if you do dog sports, a lot of the advancement with dog sport, whether that be something like agility or hoopers or heelwork to music or man trailing or whatever it might be, is so much of that is rooted in us as humans learning better skills, changing what we do, advancing our handling, advancing our footwork. A lot of that change is on us. It's us learning as much as the dog is. But contextually, we kind of sign up for that. If I'm going to learn heel work to music with my dog, it's a skill I don't have. So I'm kind of a bit more open to learning stuff. Whereas when it comes to more life skill based activities, things where I'm going to have to do things that I find quite natural, like walking around a park, my desire to change drops very, very, very quickly. And therefore, I'm again shifting my attention to where do I perceive the changes need to occur, and it is often targeted at the dog. So again, when you're out and about, think, have a look, find what those patterns are. If you are one of those people struggling with something and you have tried everything and you're persevering with something and you just don't feel like you're progressing, if you're working with a professional, ask them, what can I do differently? And be open-minded to the response. Ask them to be honest, ask them to work with you and give you that honest feedback, because honest feedback is difficult to give. It's even harder to receive. But you've got to have that ability to do that to be able to progress with a lot of training aspects. And even if you're not working with a professional, just have a look at yourself. See, is there something? Is it always me? Is it always the same? Is it always kind of the same setup over and over and over again? You know, a real world example. Axel, quite young, our little pup, found out that jumping up at counters was a really fun game because occasionally you got these big jackpot rewards. Now, I could look at that and look at ways to stop my dog jumping up at the counter, or I can look at ways that I as a human could change what I'm doing and maybe not leave temptation out there for him. Remove that opportunity instantly. And that takes a change for me because I've got dogs that don't jump up at counters, and therefore I've not really had to worry about leaving a plate on the side or a takeaway wrapper or whatever it might be, where now I have a dog that does. And it's so easy. Don't get me wrong, it's frustrating. Absolutely, it's frustrating. But it would be remiss of me to just put all of that blame on Axel and have to train, and it's the dog's fault, and the dog needs to change, and the dog needs to do something. Let's be honest, it's a perfectly natural behaviour for him. And that could, again, very quickly suck the life and fun out of me having a wonderful pup. Whereas if I can say, do you know what, new house rule, we don't leave stuff on the sides, you know, then perfect. He's not going to have the chance to practice that behaviour, therefore he's not going to get rewarded for it, which instantly just makes everything a bit easier. And then the amount of training I'm going to have to do, honestly, is going to be minuscule. It's going to be so much smaller because I've just changed the environmental setup by changing my own habits to help my dog out. And again, I totally appreciate that my willingness to do that is probably a little bit greater than you know, the vast majority of people, because I'm a little bit more aware of that as a human and obviously with my dogs. But that is how you get such quick results. It's how you get much, much better kind of progress with your dog. And remember that a lot of these are not, you know, forever actions. They are steps on the ladder to get to where it is that you want to go. But you've really got to think about, what am I doing, and am I the one who's not prepared to change? Am I the one that's stuck in my ways? Am I the one that's doing the same thing over and over again expecting a different result? Because if I am, then me changing and me being less stubborn is absolutely going to be one of the biggest steps and biggest changes you can do to ensuring that you progress with whatever it is that you're trying to achieve with your dog. So folks, I think that'll do for now. Have a look at it, reflect on it. I'd be really interested to hear your comments. So you know where to find me on the good old socials, via the website, drop me an email, and I'll happily dive into this topic again and again. If you've got a specific example that you would like me to dive into, then please do send it over. I'd absolutely love to. But take away for today, folks. Have a think about it. Reflect on yourselves. And is it really your dog that's stubborn, or is it really you? Hey everyone, thanks again for listening to the Woofing Possum podcast. As always, if you do want to get in touch, you can find us on social media.
I'm at Great Paws NE, which is Great Paws NE for Northeast, on both Facebook and Instagram. You can also contact me via my website, which is greatpaws.co.uk. And you can also consume some free online courses at greatpawsgang.co.uk. Excellent. Thank you very much, folks. And we will see you soon for our next episode.